The closing market report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333.
Welcome to the closing market report for Wednesday, May 28, 2008. This is Dave Dickey. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois. And later this half hour, we'll have cash grain analysis with Kay Whitlock of Terre Haute Grain in Terre Haute, Indiana. In agricultural news, USDA is opening CRP land to grazing without penalty. We'll have details. Also, new federal studies are on the way on the food versus fuel debate. We'll have these and other stories this half hour. Drew Lerner of World Weather will be by with the latest on Midwest conditions. And Todd Gleason will have a report on stripe rust. It's showing up on Illinois wheat. It's all on the Wednesday edition of your Closing Market Report. The Closing Market Report is a production of WILL AM 580, a broadcasting service of the College of Media at Illinois.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Leonard Seed Service, an independent dealer providing DeKalb and Asgro seed products to farmers in East Central Illinois. Leonard Seed Service provides customer services and agronomic information to help customers maximize profits. Leonard Seed Service, 217-497-2270.
Wednesday afternoon, prices settled like this in Kansas City, July wheat. 803.5 down 1.5, September 815.75 down 2. July wheat at the Chicago Board of Trade, 759 unchanged. September, 774.5 up a quarter. December, 796.25 up a quarter. July corn, 592.5 down 5.5. September, 605.5 down 5.5. December, 619.5 down 6. March, 633 down 6. July beans, 1372.75 up 25. August, 1375.75 up 24.25. September, 1362.25 up 17.5. November, 1357.25 up 16. July soybean meal, 343.70 up 8.70. July soybean oil, 62.65 up 45. June live cattle, 96.72.5 up 2.5. August feeders, 115.80 up 55. June lean hogs, 76.75 down 20. And those are the settlements from Kansas City and Chicago. Taking a look at outside markets for you, July crude oil is at 130.98 up 213. August, 131.28 up 234. June ethanol settled at 249.8 up 13. Natural gas on June at 11.91 up 10.9. Taking a look at June heating oil, 381.70 up 17.8. Silver contract for July, 17.415, the settlement there, down a nickel. The gold price on the June contract settlement at $900.50, down $7.40. The Dow Jones Industrial Average trading at 12,535, off just over 13 points, while the U.S. dollar is at 72.55, and it's up 21. CRB index at 427.90 is up 266. And the S&P 500 at 1383 is off 210. Taking a look at Ed Kieser's two-state forecast for tonight, he says clear to partly cloudy, lows ranging from 38 in northeastern Indiana to 54 in far southern Illinois. Tomorrow in northern Illinois, partly sunny with a chance of a few scattered showers and thunderstorms during the afternoon. Elsewhere, mostly sunny, highs ranging from 62 along the Chicago lakefront to around 80 degrees in southern Illinois. Widespread showers and thunderstorms are expected across the northern third of Illinois and Indiana on Friday, with scattered thunderstorms developing farther south during the afternoon.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Stuart Peterson. For over 20 years, Stuart Peterson has helped farmers manage both marketing opportunities and risks through their analysis, advice, and action. Stuart Peterson's team of experts and strategic consulting approach utilize the latest technology. Stuart Peterson, confidence like never before. More information is available at www.stuart-peterson.com.
Joining us now for our look at the futures market is Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois. Good afternoon, Paul.
Good afternoon, Dave. Nice to talk to you on this sunny, pretty day.
Very much a tale of a couple of pits at the Chicago Board of Trade. In fact, all three. You had the soybeans rallying sharply. You had the corn off a little bit, and you had the wheat basically neutral.
Yes, it was a very unusual market, and of course, the overnight news was rather dynamic with the signature of an order. The Secretary of Agriculture basically opened up for haying and grazing 24 million acres of CRP ground available to farmers, ranchers on the August 1st time frame. It is rather significant for two reasons. The cattle industry have been suffering from high-priced feed grains, and the second thing is that it's an unusual factor because of this early announcement, no penalties other than a service charge, and also it's a very unique thing because it's unprecedented. It did create selling overnight as well as weaker oil prices, and it does basically signal the first realization that the Department of Agriculture realizes that that food is extremely important. He wants to basically help the livestock industry, and the bottom one is it's an election year, and election politics do strange and unusual things.
Is there any credence, Paul, to ideas that maybe some producers looking at higher corn prices might be taking a look at ripping up some of their pasture land, putting it into corn, and then going into the CRP land for their pasture?
I think it's brought up, and I think it would work better with soybeans, is basically you get the first crop of hay off, you use Roundup, and then no-till soybeans into that ground. It could also work to some extent with corn. The calendar's working against you in corn. The bean opportunity with the time frame and the lateness in planting would also work. It does also give us the idea that when push comes to shove, we possibly could see some CRP acres going into farmable ground. We understand about 4.5 million acres basically expire on their contractual basis and will probably go into production this fall and next spring in the second place. The big thing is that it could happen. Will it be significant? Because there is, I think, something in the neighborhood of something like 20-some million acres of pasture ground or more in the United States. So it could be a factor. My opinion is 1 or 2 million acres would be an extreme.
Meanwhile, it's very much still a market that is keeping a close eye on the crude oil market, and their prices rallied after being weaker early in the day. We had word that rebel forces are considering attacking production facilities in Nigeria, and that lends some support to the market, and so much so that today very much was a bear trap for the oil folk.
Yes, it was. And there was generally lower on profit-taking. No doubt about it, $4 a gallon pump prices having a tremendous impact on the U.S. economy. Not only will the housing industry suffer, but the actual, you know, transportation cost of doing business, it's a very tremendously large shock to the economic system. Our general impression was that other than profit-taking, there really wasn't anything in the background to encourage a big decline in crude oil. It did bounce back, and it did help stabilize corn, soybeans, and wheat, in my opinion.
And I guess one of the questions that we have to begin to think about is whether or not the demand for oil and the demand for gasoline is waning it to some degree. I saw today that the Energy Information Administration says oil demand in March was 620,000 barrels per day less than previously estimated and is at its lowest level for any month of March in the past 5 years. So it does look like behavior on, among consumers is beginning to change.
Well, and, you know, definitely I'm using the cruise control, slowing down, taking a little longer to come to work. But, you know, there is an expense here, and I think it's noted everywhere, in the interstate highways, slower speeds, less traffic, and the cost of traveling is very expensive. We do know this, that the high cost of energy is encouraging still more ethanol plants coming on stream. In April, May, I think one person mentioned today, 7 or 8 new plants. Maybe the government's closer to being right with saying, you know, 75 to 100 million more bushels of use towards corn being converted into ethanol is supportive to the corn demand and corn usage. So that was an indirect support that was noted by one analyst.
What do you make of that New Mexico Senator Jeff Bingaman seems to be giving the CFTC a June 10th deadline to explain why index funds should or should not be into the speculative category?
Well, I'm anxiously waiting for that answer as well as I think almost every commodity trader in the United States. So, you know, it's a point well taken, and I think it deserves a good answer.
You think that there are implications longer term for traders depending on what that answer is? I imagine there are.
Well, that's a possibility. The one worry I think the marketplace has is, will all of a sudden reducing a person's positions, let's say, from unlimited contracts down to one in which they can have 2,000 or 3,000 contracts, is all of a sudden going to distort prices 50 cents or a dollar a bushel? And I don't think we're in that kind of a situation. I think the big factor here is the energy is still going to be extremely supportive to corn, soybeans, and wheat. And I think to some extent we have seen a large amount of commodity money going over into the stock market. And I think that one of the things that we could see is these big index funds, instead of trading oil futures, for example, would buy Exxon, Mobil, Exxon, Chevron, Marathon, ConocoPhillips as a trading tool. And with the efficiencies of that marketplace, they could also handle some tremendous volumes. The big difference there between buying a contract of Exxon versus a contract of crude oil, of course, is one has to pay for it 100% versus a margin. And that's the difference in the trading. And also one of the definitions that's bothering a lot of congressmen and senators in the United States.
Thank you, Paul.
Have a profitable day.
You too. Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
In agricultural news, USDA says it will allow up to 24 million acres of the Conservation Reserve Program to be used for livestock, hay, or grazing later this summer without penalty. USDA projects the plan could translate into 18 million tons of forage worth $1.2 billion. USDA Secretary Ed Schaefer says this is a one-time effort to help livestock producers deal with high feed costs this year.
In the past, and certainly in emergency situations where you know, farmers have been allowed to hay, we've reduced that rental payment because they've created economic value, and it's been in response to disasters. In this case, we're asking these folks to do this, to enroll in this new program, which will provide hay and forage out there. So we felt it appropriate not to reduce their income for helping us out down there and providing more feedstocks across the country.
USDA says it will charge a one-time $75 fee for sign-up, which begins June 2nd. Meanwhile, the National Cattlemen's Beef Association says the plan misses the mark because it does not include a CRP payment reduction. USDA and energy analysts will release a report by the end of the month on biofuels requested by New Mexico Senator Jack Bingaman, chair of the Energy and Natural Resources Committee. Bingaman says the food versus fuel debate is complicated and that Congress does not have the facts on the links between U.S. ethanol and biodiesel consumption and food prices. Meanwhile, Indiana Senator Richard Lugar has his opinion. He says food inflation is tied to emerging economies, the highest oil prices on record that's stimulating ethanol production, a weak U.S. dollar, expanding trade barriers, increased commodity speculation, and market-distorting subsidies. A U.S. Climate Change Science Program report released yesterday says rising temperatures will cause plants to grow more quickly and cause more livestock deaths during the hottest summer months. Jerry Hatfield is with USDA's Ag Research Service.
The increased temperature causes plants to grow faster, which is not necessarily a good thing because the faster they grow, the smaller they are, and it does offset some of the impacts of CO2. Also, the warmer it is during the reproductive stage of plants has an impact on pollination as well as grain set.
The report says climate change has increased the growing season by as much as 2 weeks over the past 19 years. Argentina farmers debated yesterday whether to launch a new protest against a grains export tax. Monday, the government called off negotiations with producers on the tax. Over the weekend, 200,000 people critical of the tax held a protest. Argentina government officials accused rally organizers of seeking to impose their position in canceling Monday's meeting. North Dakota Senator Byron Dorgan has called on the Federal Trade Commission to examine the business practices of the fertilizer industry. Fertilizer prices have skyrocketed. In April, producers paid 65% more for fertilizers than they did a year ago. Phosphate has climbed to as high as $1,000 a ton, up from $365 last year. Potash is now more than $700 compared with $230 a year ago. Fertilizer producers deny charges of price gouging. They say they are raising prices to reflect tight supplies and growing demand. Meanwhile, China yesterday says it could extend its export tax on fertilizer until December 31st. Beijing says it will also apply special export duties on all non-fertilizer phosphate chemicals and mineral products. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
The closing market report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333.
The cool temperatures in the Midwest are not doing the crops any favors. Todd Gleason has this report on stripe rust, which has shown up on wheat in Illinois.
Stripe rust of wheat is caused by a fungus. University of Illinois plant pathologist Carl Bradley reports the disease was diagnosed earlier this month at a seed company research plot near Mount Vernon, Illinois. He says cool temperatures in the spring are favorable for stripe rust development, so the weather that much of the state has expressed and experienced the last few weeks is conducive for this disease. Stripe rust symptoms are observed as long stripes of yellow to orange-colored pustules on the leaves. Bradley says because the fungus produces spores that can travel through the air, wheat growers in other areas of Illinois should take caution and perhaps management action on susceptible varieties. Stripe rust can be managed using resistant varieties and foliar fungicides. Both strobilurum and triazole fungicides have activity against stripe rust. In most of southern Illinois, though, he says it may be too late to apply fungicides according to manufacturers' labels. The latest growth stage when many fungicides can be applied to wheat is at full head emergence. A few fungicides can be applied slightly later. Bradley cautions wheat growers to avoid spraying any products that can contain Estrobolarum fungicide as an active ingredient. These include Headline, Quadris, Quilt, and Stratego during the latest stages of development because of the potential to increase what's called DON, or vomitoxin, in the harvested grain. DON is a mycotoxin. Research studies in the U.S. and other parts of the world have shown that Estrobolarum fungicides applied during the late heading stages can increase DON levels in grain. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Joining us now with our cash grain analysis is Kay Whitlock of Terre Haute Grain in Terre Haute, Indiana. Good afternoon, Kay.
Well, Dave, good afternoon to you.
You know, we were talking off the air about the condition of the corn crop and how many producers your way will need to replant. And given what you told me and how the corn is trading, I would think that it's still not in traders' mindsets.
It really isn't, as far as I'm concerned. You know, of course, the crop progress report yesterday showed, you know, 88% planted versus an average of 94, and that's all Chicago needed to hear. And, of course, crude oil was down yesterday, and it seems to be the guidance, too. But really and truthfully, you know, the eastern corn belt, especially in this area, we're going to have to replant maybe half the crop. Some farmers, 60 to 70%. Some stands are okay. But I pass a field of corn on real high sand ground that's been out of the ground for a month, and it's only like 4 inches tall. So really, we're not getting off to a very good start in this area, Dave. This crop is just not, we're not going to have optimum yields, at least in this area.
And I would think that would be the case in Ohio and southern Illinois and parts of Iowa and parts of Missouri. There's just a lot of places where getting this corn in the ground has been a real chore.
We still got a lot to go in the first time, a lot of replant, a lot of it's just rotting. The stands aren't very good. And I'm hopeful that maybe when the conditions report comes out Monday, that's going to really tell the tale, because there's just no doubt it's just – just being in the ground is only one thing. That's just a very small part of the equation. And we've still got a long way to go in beans. I doubt if we're not nearly half done here, maybe 30, 40%.
Meanwhile, basis has been rather sloppy.
It's just getting worse. And, you know, really, it defies logic. I don't really understand it myself. Of course, I know that the CIF basis is down drastically because of ocean freight is so expensive and a lot of businesses being shipped to the Pacific Northwest. But some of the processors have backed off on their corn bids, and the rail basis is still sloppy. So, yeah, it's just just not a really good situation.
It's running a little bit counter-seasonal, isn't it?
It really is, because normally when the farmers are in the field, your basis levels usually catch fire, and, boy, that's not happening this year. So with the board going down and the basis not helping, it's just not a really good situation in the cash corn market, that's for sure.
And I imagine producers are not selling.
I just started to say they are not selling. They could care less. Even if they're not in the field, I'm just not getting a lot of phone calls as to what the market's going to do. So right now they're just going to sit and wait and see what happens. And some analysts are saying that we'll probably see a big bounce before the crop revisions, the acreage revisions come out. That could be a little bit bearish to corn, though.
Let's get your prices.
All right, cash corn today is $5.68. Cash beans are $13.51, and wheat is $5.49.
Thank you much, Kay.
Thank you, Dave.
Kay Whitlock of Terre Haute Grain in Terre Haute, Indiana. You can subscribe to podcasts of all our agricultural offerings. Go to WILLAG.org and click on the podcast link in the right navigation window. That's WILLAG.org. It's National Hamburger Day. The word hamburger comes from Hamburg steak, which originated in the German city of Hamburg. The recipe was brought to North America by German immigrants. By the way, the cheeseburger first appeared in 1924. Credit goes to grill chef Lionel Steinberg of the Right Spot in Pasadena, California. On this day in agricultural history in 1892, the Sierra Club was formed in San Francisco for nature conservation. In 1897, Jell-O was introduced. Pearl Waite, a carpenter and cough medicine manufacturer, produced Jell-O varieties in strawberry, raspberry, orange, and lemon fruit flavors. By the way, the dessert was named by Waite's wife, May. White eventually sold the Jell-O business to a neighbor for $450, who, with the help of a national campaign in Ladies' Home Journal, pushed sales by 1902 to $250,000. And in 2003, the first cloned horse was born in a natural delivery. The foal was created in the lab by fusing an adult skin cell and an empty egg, then returning the resulting embryo to the female's womb after a few days. Although clones are currently banned from racing, tissue from many top animals have been stored for cloning. The birth was announced in Nature on August 7th of 2003. And that's this day in agricultural history. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us for our look at the agricultural weather is Drew Lerner, senior meteorologist of World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Good afternoon, Drew.
Good afternoon, Dave.
I will say that the corn and soybean belt needs a warming trend.
Absolutely. Things are looking a little bit different. Maybe a seasonal shift in the jet stream taking place. There will be still yet several days of showers and thunderstorms coming up here. Thursday through Saturday will be the next round of wet weather, and that will hold those temperatures back just a little bit. But as we get into next week, the jet stream is going to lift further to the north. That is going to shift most of the significant rain into the region from the Dakotas and parts of Nebraska over to Michigan, allowing a lot warmer and drier conditions to evolve in the lower parts of the Midwest. And that is going to include places like Kansas and Missouri and areas eastward into the Ohio River Basin. Now, places like Iowa will probably have to wait a little while longer to see aggressive weather conditions coming back into play, but southern sections of Iowa and southern Nebraska will be included in this drier biased pattern coming up here for next week. Temperatures will get into the 80s much more often than what we've seen at any other point during this growing season. For the southern half of the production region, so that will definitely push these crops into a much more aggressive rate of development.
Anything in your research suggesting that we are beginning a trend shift toward drier conditions from the wet spring we've had?
Yes, I do see that starting to take place. A lot of the data that I work with on a regular basis here has been suggesting that towards the latter part of June and especially in July is when we will see the biggest shift towards that drier bias. But the first requirement in moving in that direction, of course, is to get this jet stream to move further to the north because it's so abnormally far to the south. That's why it's been so cool this spring. And everything seems to be coming together as it was advertised to, and for that reason I do believe that as we get into the last week or two of June, and especially July, we are going to see much warmer and drier weather, especially in the western Corn Belt and the central plains, and some of that will definitely be bleeding over the Mississippi River into parts of the lower Midwest and the Delta as well.
Turn your attention to world weather conditions down in Australia, where more rain is needed pretty much everywhere.
That's right. There has been some beneficial rain in some areas in the far southeast corner and also the extreme southwest corner of the country, but the rest of the nation is really hurting for moisture. New South Wales is probably the biggest wheat, barley, and canola production region that needs a good generalized soaking right now. I don't see anything really very substantial slated for these areas for the next full week to 10 days. We are hoping that perhaps when we get beyond the second week in June that things will change quite a bit. The atmosphere right now is kind of locked in with the pattern that they have at the moment, but there are some changes that are predicted to occur across the Indian Ocean that should eventually help to change weather in Australia as we get into the second half of June.
Thanks, Drew.
Have a good day.
Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City, and that's today's Closing Market Report. Remember, you can listen to all of our agricultural broadcasts on the web. Go to WILLAG.org. This is Dave Dickey.